from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to the Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of Heart's summer production of Taming of the Shrew at the White River State Park.
I'll find out about the Go Ahead and Play piano project.
And I'll see what the Inuit Opera has planned for this year's Fringe Festival. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Heartland Actors Repertory Theater, also known as HART, is back with Shakespeare in White River State Park. This time it's The Taming of the Shrew, and Sharon Gamble invited producer Diane Timmerman, director Michael Shelton, and cast member Mark Getzinger in to learn more.
I want to start with Michael and Diane. What's the biggest difference between producing and directing Shakespeare outdoors and indoors in a more traditional theater setting?
Is that me?
Either
go
one or
it.
Both.
Diane just stares at me. All right. I don't know. The biggest difference really is just dealing with all of the elements of the outdoors. You know, you have to, it's a much larger scale for one thing. So, you know, I always try to sort of factor that into blocking and whatnot and incorporate the environment as best as we possibly can and find interesting places that people aren't looking for actors to appear from and, you know, those kinds of things, which you don't really have the opportunity to do in a more traditional, you know, indoor.
Space is pretty limited indoors.
Yeah, exactly. So that's nice and from a creative standpoint. And then, of course, you've got to deal with bugs. You got to deal with heat. You got to deal with helicopters flying over.
All of which
over.
The
you've
actors gotta, can't acknowledge, right?
Well, for the most part, you know, every now and then one gets a little rowdy and plays the helicopter above. But, you know, you got to...
Which happened last year with Ryan Hartsberger and Othello, because this helicopter was just hovering. We had to do something.
He was watching.
He played it.
Yeah.
I'd say the other big difference in terms of producing is just creating that festival atmosphere. So getting the food trucks there. We've got Sun King Brewery is going to be there both nights. We've got wineries both nights.
You've got pre-performance. We've got warm-up acts,
12th
right?
12th Night Blues Band is going to play both nights. We've got the Renaissance Quartet. We may have a solo singer, we're hoping. And so putting that together, putting the festival atmosphere together is, of course, completely different. And making sure people pick up their chairs from White River State Park, that we've got the little chairs that people can just grab and just kind of orchestrating the audience area in a way that you don't, of course, have to do in a traditional theater space.
Drat that audience. So everything has to be literally and figuratively bigger. How do you keep the subtlety that you need in the performance?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know that I can pinpoint it with a direct answer, but it's just basically my philosophy as a director is I always and thankfully the way that we've done this company, we've started this company and continued this company, is that we've been able to use a lot of really, really good equity actors.
Sure.
So I surround myself with incredibly talented people and give them the freedom to be able to play. So really coming in, I mean, when we hear the initial read through of any of these pieces, this one in particular was just hysterical just from the first get go. And it's because the subtleties are often just sort of built into those folks. So really my job becomes reining that energy in
and channeling it
mm-hmm. and directing it where we want it to go. So, it's actually a little simpler to get them to go a little larger because, you know, everyone has a very nice believability about them from the beginning. So the subtlety, thankfully, is generally sort of there, and I don't have to build that in too much. It becomes more a question of getting them to make everything a little bit larger for the large scale that we're on.
Makes good sense.
Usually is how that works.
Yeah. And also this year we have a brand new sound system thanks to the support from the Indianapolis Foundation at CICF and Lilly Endowment. We actually purchased purchased our own sound equipment, which is new for us this year. We've had a few sound issues in the past. And we have Todd Reichman from the IRT who's running the system. So I think that also brings a subtlety is when you have really good sound equipment like we do.
Which of you, for our listeners who are thinking, oh, Taming of the Shrew, I kind of remember it. It's been too many years since I've seen it. Who wants to do a 30,000-foot plot summary for us? Everybody's looking at Mark.
You see, if I do that, it's going to be all about this father who has two daughters.
That's fine.
You tell it from your perspective.
I like
you go
that.
Right ahead.
So this father has two daughters. Tell us about Bianca and Kate.
Well, Kate, Katerina, is a bit of a handful. And nobody wants to have anything to do with her. And Bianca, on the other hand, is supposedly this nice, well-behaved young lady, beautiful young lady, who every suitor wants. And so he decides he must marry off the older daughter, Katerina, before he marries off the younger daughter, because if he marries the younger daughter off first, nobody will want the older one. He'll be
sure.
Stuck with her for the rest of his life. So that's the story of the play right there.
We all the look end. Through a different lens. I love that.
Oh, and there's this guy, Petruchio.
Oh, like him. Him.
Yeah. Who has his own behavioral issues, I suppose you could say. And so people will know and remember the production if they think about Kate and Petruchio. They're the couple that are the fieriest couple from Shakespeare, and they're just a great match for each other. They have some great scenes together, and both the actors playing those two roles are incredible. So we're really excited to have Lisa Ermel and Ryan Artsberger play those roles. They're amazing.
They really are. Yeah. And then the other piece of, like, sort of plot whatever is this one, like a lot of Shakespeare's comedies, has the thing where the servants are a lot smarter than the masters. everybody has somebody following them around, and everybody ends up in disguise to try to achieve
sure.
what they want. You know, the suitors start dressing up as schoolmasters, and you know, servants are playing the master so that the master can be the servant, so that they can get to the girl, and it's all, you know, gets a little muddled and all of that.
Well, actually, gets a little muddled in rehearsal the first time through. You go, no, wait a minute, who are you now?
Right.
Yeah.
Do I know you, or are you in disguise?
Do I not know you in this scene? Yeah,
right. So.
And as with many playwrights who start out without a lot of money, there's some commentary on commerce and capitalism in here, yeah? And wealth versus not having.
Sure. There's
a lot of rich versus poor. And, you know, that's, you know, I think mainly illustrated through the sort of the servant versus the master thing. And then those role reversals really play that all of that up. But there's a lot about commerce. I mean, you know, there's when we start talking about marrying off the daughters, you know, the first thing we talk about is the dowry. What am I going to get for this? You know, so, that's definitely a factor.
And Petruchio is in it for the money at first, and then I think he discovers something in Kate that's a lot more than money. But he's definitely all about the money at the beginning of the
day. He comes to wive it wealthily.
That's why he comes, yeah.
Yeah.
Get the dowry, yeah.
That's kind of the turning point, in a way, is there's a coming together of lots of turning points where people come into the characters come into the play in one way, and most are changed by the end, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure about most, but there certainly is a big arc for the major characters who almost end up, you know, coming into a reverse position, you know, from where they started. I'd say that's true of the couples for sure. And,
the servants,
you know,
are still smart. They just had the chance to prove they were
the
smart.
The servants just got to play the master for the last couple hours. That's, you know, they end up where they started for the most part.
But they had a fun ride.
They had a great
ride. That's
right.
There we go. Mark, you've done so much theater, both indoors and out. What excites you about doing Taming of the Shrew outdoors? What scares you about doing Taming of the Shrew outdoors, in either order?
Well, I spent all last summer working outdoors, a 5-month up in Wisconsin. And at first, I was very frightened of it because you're dealing with so many different things. Now, over that season, we dealt with heat, we dealt with cold, we dealt with rain, we dealt with bats.
That's exciting.
They have bats that live in the set. They have this big permanent set. And in the middle of a scene, a bat might fly 3 feet in front of your face. Just whoop, there you go, you know. And they come out every night about dusk. And we love them, though, because they eat the mosquitoes.
Right.
So you're dealing with the bugs and mosquitoes. And then it's in the middle of the woods, and so you have these whippoorwills out there that will just sing for sometimes a half an hour. Just, you know, this and they sound like they're sitting on your shoulder. But after a while, you get so you kind of embrace all that. And you
expect it?
You don't know what to expect.
Sure.
But that becomes kind of the excitement of it. It's kind of like, okay, what do you got for me tonight?
Yeah.
What are you going to throw at me tonight? And what am I going to get through tonight? And the whole company is sort of on that same page, and it becomes this really exciting moment every night of let's go do this and see what we have tonight.
It never becomes tedious that
it
way.
It's never a stale show.
It is
never stale.
Yeah.
And so that's, to me, kind of one of the exciting things and yet kind of one of the frightening things at the same time.
Because that's part of why you do theater, isn't it? To have a fresh experience?
Oh, I have a very low threshold of boredom. Yeah. And so that's one of the main reasons I've stayed with it for so long is that it's always, you know. And no show lasts forever, so you know that there's going to be something new down the road, or hopefully. to me, that's what outdoor theater is kind of about. And here it's kind of sad because we only get 2 tries, you know. So we're just getting warmed up and it's done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
for now.
Yeah.
We're expanding. We'll expand.
Yeah.
Sharon Gamble with producer Diane Timmerman, director Michael Shelton, and cast member Mark Getzinger of Hart's production of The Taming of the Shrew. See the performance August 9th and 10th at 8 p.m. with food trucks and a pre-show entertainment, all brought to you by Hart in the White River State Park. You can learn more at heartlandactors.com. That's heartlandactors.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Women's Fund of Central Indiana Go Ahead and Play is a public art project led by 6th through 12th grade students who are using their talent, time, and leadership to bring art and music to Central Indiana. The project is completely volunteer-driven and is guided by parents and Women's Fund staff. From August 1st through the 18th, these Go students will publicly introduce pop-up pianos transformed by local artists in all sorts of locations throughout the community. Travis DiNicola spoke with Jennifer Polk Baker, executive director of the Women's Fund, and with Maddie Hudson, a student involved with the project.
Jennifer, Maddie, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
So this sounds like a pretty fun project that you two get to be a part of this summer with pianos popping up everywhere. Before we get into that, though, Jennifer, first tell me a bit about the Women's Fund and also about this philanthropy program for students that the GO program is all about.
Women's Fund of Central Indiana does 3 things. We raise money, we give it away, and we do philanthropy education. And our raising money and giving it away is all centered on helping improve conditions for women and girls in our community. And one of the things that we think is very important is to help educate people of all ages about how they can become thoughtfully involved in our community and helping us with improving conditions for women and girls. And so one of the ways we do that is through our Go Education program, which is for children who are in 1st through 12th grade.
And how long has that program been around for now?
This program has been around since the year 2000, so mm-hmm. we've been doing it for a little bit more than 13 years now. And in the way a student gets involved is a parent or grandparent, typically, would start a Go Fund for them. That is a donor-advised fund that is mm-hmm. a part of Women's Fund. And when the child is in first grade through 12th grade, they participate in both gender and age-specific programming with us, and they learn.
So it's not limited just to girls in terms of the GO program.
That's correct.
Okay.
We are for women and girls, but mm-hmm. we need men and boys to be a part of the solution to improve conditions. And so with the GO curriculum, it's really focused on self, community, money management, meaningful service, and philanthropic inspiration. And they meet twice a year in person, and twice a year we send interesting packets to the family to do together. So mm-hmm. the family has a way to share their values with the children in a facilitated way, because it's often difficult for parents to share those values. They're not exactly sure how to tell their children that there are good things that they can do with their extra time, money, and talent.
Now, are most of the families that get involved in the GO program families that you've already worked with in other capacities through the Women's Fund, or how do you go about finding them?
You know, it's started out that way, that there are people who are already involved in us with us, and now we see GO families becoming involved with Women's Fund in different ways. So mm-hmm. now it's become a circle because we've been doing it for so long. So people come in through many different doors to Women's Fund and engage in different ways.
So Maddie, tell me about how you got involved with being a GO student. How long have you been part of the program? How'd you get involved in the first place?
Well, my mom has always been really interested in helping people, and she really wants me to be able to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was about 2 or 3, she started a fund for me, and of course the program starts in first grade, so I didn't do anything until I was in first grade, but
that's still pretty young, even first grade, to start getting involved with it. That's very impressive.
Yeah, but so she just really wanted me to get a chance to be able to make a difference myself.
So what form did that take for you? I mean, when you first started getting involved in the program, you took classes, or how did you learn about philanthropy?
We meet with other girls, mm-hmm. meet with other girls my age. So when they send us these packets in the mail, they usually send us like a book or something to do. And when we meet, we discuss it and we talk about things that matter. We talk about things in our community and how we can give back.
So what are some causes that are really important to you?
I really, really like helping with like the Julian Center and mm-hmm. really helping women in those situations.
Okay.
So
far up until now, and we'll talk about the pianos in just a minute, but what's been the most rewarding experience for you as far as being a GO student?
I really like how I can meet with other people who care about philanthropy like I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of hard to find that when you're just with your friends, and I think it's really helped me learn what I want to do when I grow up, is that I want to help people.
Excellent. Very good. So I'm guessing, Jennifer, that Maddie is kind of like a perfect example of how this is supposed to play out, right?
Maddie is a perfect example of how it's supposed to play out, but what's exciting to me is Maddie is not a singular example of mm-hmm. how it's playing out, that she is joined by a lot of really thoughtful girls and boys who are participating and learning how to engage in a meaningful way.
So Maddie mentioned the Julian Center. What are some other organizations that the students have been able to get involved in or perhaps work with?
Well, one of the things we do is try to give them real examples in an age-appropriate way. And I think of something that we did a year or so ago with our students when everybody was learning about the economic security piece, because we know that's what makes a difference for everything. You know, Maddie mentioned an interest in helping women who are victims of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a woman who has economic security, it's easier for you to escape a violent situation if you have financial choices.
Sure.
You have an extra check mark in your column. So learning about financial choices, we had a session where our youngest kids were learning about, well, what's it like to live in a family with that doesn't have security, and the fact that there are mommies who can't afford to buy food and put gas in the car or buy food and pay the light bill. And so helping children understand just the scope of a problem, but then with our older kids, they read the book Nickeled and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich about what it's like to live on minimum wage, and then they went to Dress for Success and met with people there to see how is that playing out in real life in our own community. Because these are all children who participate and go who have wants and not needs, that they come from families with financial stability. And so we're helping them understand what their place is, but what's the world like in our own community? It's not just bad in a third world country. There are people who live within minutes of our own homes, or people who maybe you go to school with whose families struggle on a day-to-day basis. So helping them just understanding the continuum, and we do that with a lot of different organizations.
So how did the idea for this piano project come about? Because this is pretty fun. The Go Ahead and Play, which is going to be hitting the streets from August 1st through the 18th, sort of a pop-up piano project. I mean, basically it's artists doing their work on pianos. Is that sort of the idea?
Well, we had 20 pianos that have been transformed by artists that will be on the streets.
So not necessarily in playable condition anymore.
They're all in playable
condition.
They
are, okay.
They're all good instruments.
Okay.
And the idea how it came about is kind of crazy. We have had several times a family philanthropy day where the whole family comes together, and we've brought in a national speaker that speaks to the whole family, and then we divide up with adults and students and even the very youngest toddlers who might not learn about philanthropy, but they have a fun day and then they never remember a time when they weren't involved.
Sure.
So we were looking for somebody to come to Family Philanthropy Day last year and stumbled upon Monica Eunice, who started a program in New York City called Sing for Hope. And I was very attracted to learning more about that because Monica's father, Muhammad Eunice, started the Grameen Bank, which Women's Fund was one of the key funders that helped bring that to Indianapolis.
Wow.
So I thought, well, this is a good way to bring those two thoughts together. And the more we learned about her, we were really excited because she had her organization had provided a grant to do pop-up pianos in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, why don't we have Monica come talk about her pop-up pianos? And then we thought, well, what could our project be while she's here? Let's paint a piano. And then it just snowballed. And here we are a year and a half later, where we have our GO students, our 6th through 12th graders, have been working on this for nearly 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
They found 20 individuals to donate used pianos. They have a communications and marketing group that has been working on messaging and how to get the word out. And Maddie's a part of that group. They have a special events committee that's planned two really cool piano preview events for later this month when the pianos will all be together.
Okay.
A locations committee that figured out where will these 20 pianos go, and an artist committee that solicited artists and hobbyists from all over the state of Indiana and then juried their artwork and chose the artist who would transform the pianos.
How very cool. And all the pianos will be inside, is that correct?
All the pianos will be outside with the exception of one.
Okay, so outside.
So you can walk up and play a piano. There's actually one.
Really?
It's going to be right across the street from WFYI at Little Red Door. They will have a piano.
And then how long will they be outside for? How does that work?
August 1st to the 18th.
But, I mean, like an individual piano. Will it just be out like during a day and then
all 20 pianos will be outside for all 18 days.
Okay.
They will all be in place on the 1st through the 18th. So some might be out a day or two early because
sure.
it'll take our movers a while to get them out. And our friends from Jay's Moving, who are doing great work for us, and then maybe a couple days afterwards. And
so what about the weather?
What about the weather? Well, as you know, in Indiana, we typically don't have any rain in August.
Right,
and
sure.
So you know, my luck is this year we'll have monsoons. So what we've done with our partners at Catalyst Construction have created covers for all the pianos.
Uh-huh.
So each piano will have a buddy.
Okay.
And the buddy will be in charge of covering up the pianos at night, uncovering them in the morning, or in inclement weather.
Okay.
And that's what we've modeled everything
that's
after
so
our friends
cool.
in New York. And that's what they've done. And they've had great luck with that.
So, Maddie, this sounds like a really fun project to be involved in. First off, are you a piano player yourself at all? Or
only a little.
Only a little?
But I enjoy playing.
Okay. So tell me about what your role has been in this. I mean, it sounds like there's been a lot of different things, everything from securing locations and the marketing and finding artists. How have you been involved in this?
I'm on the communications and PR committee, mm-hmm. and I've been helping with, figuring out what social media to use and stuff. But I've also been doing, I pop in on a lot of the committees just to help because I'm available. So
have you seen some of the pianos?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do they look?
They're awesome.
Yeah?
There are tons of extremely cool pianos. And, yeah.
Do you have a favorite or can mm-hmm. you tell us yet?
Yes, I can tell you. One I like is there's a glow-in-the-dark zebra print piano.
Okay.
And then the other one is actually, they're called the Yarn Bombers. Uh-huh. They knitted a cover for the piano. So the whole thing is
How
knitted.
Cool.
So cool.
Mm-hmm. That is really neat. Now, you mentioned Little Red Door. I know that a lot of the pianos are going to places that are agencies that Women's Fund works with, right?
So what makes this work for Women's Fund? Because we are not a music and arts organization.
Yeah.
What makes this work for Women's Fund is two things. One is it's a student-led project. It's helping mm-hmm. students who we believe someday will be doing this kind of work as an adult, mm-hmm. learn how to take an interesting idea to a full-blown public project. That's what makes it work. And what else makes it work is that some of the pianos will be co-located with Women's Fund grantees during the mm-hmm. run of the project. And then following the end of the project, the pianos will permanently reside in Women's Fund grantee organizations, unless some of them are purchased at an auction that we're having at our preview party
okay.
at the end of this month. So
that was kind of my next question. How does this benefit the philanthropy or the organizations here? It's through the auction of the pianos or that they get a piano?
That they get a piano. Okay. And then
which is a pretty nice deal.
Which is it's a great deal because a lot of community centers and places would love to have a piano that's in working order for the participants
sure.
to play and to have exposure to art and music that they wouldn't ordinarily mm-hmm. have. So to have a free piano
yeah.
and have somebody deliver it to you and it's in working condition.
And it looks pretty cool.
And it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good gig. And then if we sell any of them, that money then supports our community leadership and allows us to provide
okay.
more effective grants back into the community.
So Maddie, what has your favorite part been about this whole project?
Well, I got to interview Monica Eunice, which was mm-hmm. a huge honor, and I was really nervous, but I was really excited to do that. And then also, it's really brought all of the girls together, I feel like, and guys. I've met a few mm-hmm. guys. But before, I only see them a few times a year, but I've been seeing them all the time, and it's really fun because I feel like now we're really close and so it's been really fun to do this with a bunch of people that I like.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like just an amazing project. I mean, both for the students involved as well as for the artists and, of course, the recipients. And it's going to be a lot of fun just to see all these pianos popping up all over Indianapolis over the next couple of weeks. So congratulations and thank you both for the work you're doing.
Well, thank you for your interest.
Travis DiNicola with Jennifer Pope Baker, Executive Director of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana, and Maddie Hudson, a student involved with the Go Ahead and Play project. For more information, visit womensfund.org, womensfund.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what a good idea is for hot summer nights? Hey.
Reading a Tennessee Williams play while sipping lemonade on your porch?
I like that
okay.
very much. Or maybe going outside and listening to some music near the water.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Oh,
that sounds
yeah.
like a great idea.
And
yeah.
we have those sorts of ideas on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
I felt like we ought to have delivered that in a Tennessee Williams-worthy southern accent. You in a white linen suit
that.
And me in a fluttery dress. We're not quite dressed that way today, folks. Sorry.
You can imagine that we are.
You can imagine that we are.
Well, I feel like Big Daddy here. What do you got going on there, Sharon?
Well, the Indiana Historical Society is continuing its Thursday Night Concerts on the Canal series through August.
Oh, how lovely.
Down at the Indiana History Center, you can sit out and look at the sun going down, reflecting on the water of the canal, and hears some great tunes of all different kinds. And you can get the schedule at indianahistory.org.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. You know, also on Thursday nights, I mean, you've got your choice. You could go down to the canal or also to the zoo, because they're doing animals and all that jazz at the zoo as well on Thursday nights.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of good music going on Thursday nights.
And you can check on the progress on the orangutan environment.
Oh, that's such a cool building.
It's so cool.
It's really neat. They've got some great pictures of how it's developing. Mm-hmm. You can really see, get a sense of it now. Hey, some other great things coming up. Printing Partners presents Classic Hits. It's Dance Kaleidoscope Summer Concert, August 2nd and 3rd at the Tarkington Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. Three pieces that David Ho Choi has choreographed that are being brought together for this one very special concert. Ancient Airs and Dances, Electric Counterpoint, and then the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy. These three pieces come together for Classic Hits for this new Indiana living legend, David Ho Choi, who's the choreographer for Dance Kaleidoscope. So, definitely a concert worth checking out.
Fantastic. Hey, if you're up for a little road trip, there is a great exhibit of the work of Dale Chihuly. It's called Chihuly and the Summer of Glass at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. And it's an exhibit the likes of which has not been seen in a decade. It's expected to be their big blockbuster of this season, this year. And it is going on right now at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. So a one-tank trip, I'd say, and lots of other great things to see and do in Fort Wayne. Some wonderful restaurants. The culinary scene is hot in Fort Wayne, so check it out. Summer of Glass actually continues 1 week into fall, continues through September 29th.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon,
what do you have?
Well, I know it is the middle of summer, but
auditions for IRT's A Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol, I know it always comes.
I can feel the snow now.
It's so funny. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe you could be sitting in the car at the dinner table or breakfast table right next to the next IRT star. You know, could be in your family. So if you think that your child has it in them to say God bless us everyone, well, there's only one way to find out, and that's at the youth auditions for this season's A Christmas Carol for boys and girls ages 8 to 13. The auditions are coming up middle of August, August 14th and 15th at the IRT. You do need to register ahead of time on their website. You can get more information there or give them a call and get more information about how to do this. Also, your kids may want to consider some youth classes because the IRT is offering those starting August 17th through the October 5th. There's also another fall session the 9th through the 28th for kids 4 through 18. So some great stuff going on at the IRT for your kids.
Hey, speaking of kids, if you're hearing us on Thursday night, you can go to this on Saturday morning and missed it, or maybe you saw it and had a good time. The Great American Songbook High School Vocal Academy Competition performance this Friday night, July 26th at the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. You can find out more at thecenterfortheperformingarts.org.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. It is cool. They have good air conditioning. It's a new building.
Well, more to come about this later as we find out more, but it's just been announced that there is going to be a new resident at the IMA.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the fourth residency for an artist who's going to be actually living out at 100 acres as part of their Indie Island space. It's that really cool habitable experimental living structure that, not the Eden 2, but the one that looks more like a little dome that floats in the lake there out at 100 acres. And so an artist by the name of Remus Samatis is going to be living out there for a while. In fact, is living out there right now. And so we'll find more about what Remus is doing out there very soon.
Indeed.
I hope.
Well, they haven't lost one yet. So,
so far.
Hey, save the date. Start with Art is coming up a little bit earlier than usual. It's on Friday, August 23rd. That's the fabulous annual gathering of the corporate business community and the not-for-profit arts community. A great, great gathering that always has a magnificent and thought-provoking speaker. You'll hear more about that on an upcoming interview here on The Art of the Matter, but I wanted you to just go ahead and circle that date. It's
mark
lunch
calendar.
On Friday, August 23rd. And if you're involved with an arts organization, and yes, dear listeners, we know some of you are, Start With Art is the place where the Artie Awards are announced, and Artie Award applications are due very, very soon. They're due Thursday, August 1st. You can find out more at indiearts.org about how to nominate in the categories of Corporate Award, Small Business Award, Volunteer/Patron Award, and Artful Impact Award. Indiearts.org. More info on all that.
Very good. Hey, not too soon to start thinking about what you're doing on First Friday on August 2nd, and there's a couple neat events going on, including the 6th annual book art exhibit at the Harrison Center. The name of this one is Spineless, which is just a great title, but it will be featuring all types of book art and art that deals with books in different galleries throughout the Harrison Center, but Spineless will be on Friday, August 2nd from 6 to 9. What a great title.
We love books, or we wouldn't be laughing. Don't worry.
Oh, my. But also that same night, the Circle City Industrial Complex, their artists, and the Windsor Park Neighborhood Association are joining together to showcase the newly acquired Fletcher Park, and they're going to be highlighting artists from the Circle City Industrial Complex on August 2nd with a unique outdoor First Friday in the park. And that's taking place from 5 to 10 p.m. in conjunction with Idana's First Friday Tour. And this is going to be at 1125 Brookside Avenue on the city's near east side. And again, that is right by the Circle City Industrial Complex, that huge sort of bluish long building that's about 18 football fields long, that's just off of 10th Street and Mass Avenue and Brookside over there.
That overpass that has the cool arch that Lily Day of Volunteers helped to complete. Hey, don't forget, this is the weekend Karen Irwin is taking her channeling of Janis Joplin to the cabaret at the Columbia Club performances this Friday and Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Last I heard, tickets are going fast, so get online fast and see if you can still score one.
Sharon, we got to wrap this up. We will be back next week on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Intimate Opera of Indianapolis is keeping with its tradition of seldom performed, intriguing professional opera with this year's Indie Fringe show, The Witch of the Place. It's based on a monodrama by contemporary composer Dominic Argento called Miss Havisham's Wedding Night. Sharon Gamble invited Amy Hayes, who will perform the role, in to learn more.
So, Dominic Argento, tell me about your personal history with Dominic Argento. That sounds naughty. I don't mean it that way. Musically,
well,
I mean.
He seems like a very friendly guy. So, my first experience was during a summer program in college, and I wasn't in the Dominic Argento opera that they were performing. I was in The Die Fledermaus by Strauss. So completely different.
Yeah.
So different, you couldn't get any further apart. And they were doing Postcard from Morocco, and we were allowed to sit in on other rehearsals. Mm-hmm. And I sat in on that one. And once I sat in on that one, I started sitting in on all of them, and I saw all of the performances.
Oh, my gosh.
I love his music.
What attracted you? What hooked you?
His characters. His character development is so deep and nuanced. I've never gotten to perform anybody like Miss Havisham. So the one character that I was most attracted to was the lady with the cake box in Postcard from Morocco. Uh-huh. All but one characters, they're not named in that particular opera, and I was absolutely drawn to the different ways you could interpret it. So as an audience member, I appreciated that because I wasn't told everything.
Right.
I had to interpret it for myself, and I found that fascinating because I hadn't had that experience before. And I've done arias of his, I have done songs, and now I'm getting the chance to perform a full role of his, and I couldn't be more excited.
So, Mish, the first opera he wrote based on a similar theme was Miss Havisham's Fire.
Yes, in 1979.
Which was multi-character.
Yes, yes. It's a huge cast, actually.
Yeah. from the process is a little bit funky if you start looking into it, because the libretto was sent to him and it was a short opera. It was a small production, and he was working with Dominic Argento was working with Beverly Sills to create an opera for her, like her final piece. And he was like, well, this isn't really big enough for you, this small piece. And they were going through some other ideas, and she really liked Miss Havisham, and so he created this huge opera for her while she got sick and couldn't perform it. But he still had this opera, sure. And it still got performed, and it got good reviews. The end, they said, was a little bit big, like it needed to maybe be cut down a little bit more. Uh-huh. And Miss Havisham's Fire isn't performed as much as Miss Havisham's Wedding Night.
So he kind of revisited in 1980-1981 and made mm-hmm. what's called a monodrama.
It's one person.
Yeah. Okay.
Performing. Yeah, it's just one person, and there's actually three characters, but the other two are silent or don't exist. It's one of those, it
so
could be in
know...
her mind or it could not
okay,
be
how do
in her
we
mind.
Know they're there? Because she's just referring to them.
Yeah, she
her...
talks to them. Okay. She talks to them, but there's a lot of quotation marks, like Nanny opens and it's in quotation marks. She opens the door. So maybe she opens the door. We're not really sure. Is she even there? And there's some reference in some of his interviews that they're not real, that Nanny is not real.
I see why it's perfect for a Fringe show.
Yeah.
Hey, for our listeners who are like, Havisham, and at the sound of that name, uh-huh. had a sudden flashback to their high school English teacher. Tell us where Miss Havisham comes from and her story. What is her story?
Yeah, she comes from Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, and she is an older woman. They say about in her 50s, but she looks much, much older because she was jilted. She was not left at the altar, but almost practically. And from that moment on, she doesn't change anything. The house is still in the same place. Her dress is still on. She has one shoe on and one shoe off because she was in the process of getting ready when she found out. And she has this vendetta against all men. She has a hatred towards all men because of what happened to her. And she adopts Estella, who is a young girl that she is grooming to be her revenge.
Her weapon in the world, right?
Exactly. And Pip, who comes to the house, she kind of uses him as like, this is Estella's plaything so that she can practice. And she talks to, there's a great scene about how even if she's cruel to you, you must love her. She starts talking to Pip, getting him to pushing him towards her, and she ends up being her dress catches on fire, and she ends up dying in the house much later on in the story. But she is not a huge character in the book, and so it's interesting that he takes her and makes her a whole opera. But there's a lot of psychological things going on in her mind. And that's what's really fascinating about the opera, is that there are times when you can definitely tell that she is crazy, but she has very lucid moments. It's you wonder, is she really crazy, or is she just angry and mean? Or is she hurt? I think she's all of those things, personally.
It's so dark.
It is dark.
But the original Dickens, and also it sounds like this interpretation, this Argento interpretation.
It is. And when I looked at it the first time, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this? This is so, so depressing. But there are a lot of humorous moments. And Argento is a very funny person from my friends who have had personal experiences with him and also reading his works. He is a humorous guy, and so there's a lot of really funny moments in the opera, which is great because it breaks it up, and you never really know. There are these moments where it's like, oh, it's so dark, and then she makes a joke. And she makes a joke sometimes at her own expense, which I find fascinating because I don't think you get that from a lot of interpretations of her.
Sure.
Definitely not from the book.
Is there any dialogue, or is it sung through?
It's sung through. Yeah.
And it's about It's not terribly long. No, half an hour ish.
It's about 35 minutes to 45. We have included other things with it to kind of give you an idea of how she has manipulated Estella. So you see Estella in our production actually sings, but not in the opera. The opera itself is just the opera, and we have like bookends of Estella.
Oh, I see. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. And accompaniment will be?
Piano.
Piano.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say not very long, but when you're the singer and you're singing constantly.
Yes.
And Argento is very accessible, but musically also has some challenges.
Yes.
Beautiful harmonies and just stunning craftsmanship.
It is. It's definitely it's not the hardest thing I've ever learned. It's not the hardest thing, which makes it also a little bit easier for the audience to listen to. It's
sure.
not atonal. It's not all over
right.
the place.
Right, right.
And you get a lot of melodies that reoccur, which is his point. That creates continuity in the piece. And it also makes it a little easier for the audience to listen to. But it is... it's vocal pyrotechnics, definitely. And it goes down into the bottom register, and it goes really high, and it has a lot of very difficult rhythms. But if you're going at it from a technical point of view, you definitely have to be an experienced singer. You can't go in as a young person going into this piece, because it's very wearing. It's very tiring. But I think that comes from Beverly Sills' first description. She said she wanted to be wrung out at the end of the
play. Oh, wow.
Yeah, she wanted to be wrung like a rag, like wrung out at the very end. And that is definitely true.
Wow.
Rehearsals.
No pressure or anything.
No, definitely not. Rehearsals for me happen a lot in my mind because I just can't sing that long.
Sure.
You know, when you're singing for hours and hours and hours, it you can't sing that long. And, even with the best technique, you get very exhausted.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times it's just me sitting at the piano in my head going through it.
Yeah.
And so if I can go through it in my head, then I can go through it vocally.
Like training for a marathon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The repetition kind of makes sense. The repetition of themes, though, kind of makes sense because you would imagine Miss Havisham mm-hmm. going over and over in
yeah.
her mind, coming yeah. back to what did I do wrong? I'm getting back at him. I'm getting back at the world and just...
Yeah.
Cycling back to that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of moments in the opera where Argento puts that in there. You know that she has been doing this every night from the moment that he decided not to marry her. She is surprised in the morning when it's light. She goes through this, oh, it's another night. It's another night.
And I survived, darn it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there are definitely moments where she goes from giddy and hopeful, where she hopes that he's going to come back and marry her, to if you came back, I wouldn't even look at you.
Like,
and to those moments where she would rather die. She's sad that she's still alive, but she has a reason for living now, and that's Estella. And Estella can get back at all the men.
With the possible exception of the I'm going to manipulate another three-dimensional live human being to exact my revenge, I think most people of mm-hmm. A few years at least can relate to the, you know, the breakup part
yeah,
of this. Yeah,
absolutely. And even if, obviously for her, there's no closure, but even if there is closure sometimes in relationships, you don't really know. You know, you can talk it out as much as you want, but there's still that doubt in your mind. I think that's very relatable.
Sure.
Absolutely. And I think most of us have our dark thoughts sometimes. And, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great if this happened? Or I would, oh, when he sees me, I'm going to be so much better than ever.
Exactly. He's going to regret it.
Yeah, he's going to regret it. And that's very much of what she thinks. I don't think many of us go that far, like you said, to manipulate other people. I hope not. I don't, at least. So it's an acting challenge for me.
Yeah. Well, so we've talked vocally about preparation. How emotionally, I mean, you're considerably younger than this character, but
yes.
how have you been preparing emotionally and sort of for the acting side of it?
I'm approaching it as I'm older than she was when she was left, but I've been trying to tap into the person I am now and what that would do to me. You know, what kind of person would I become if I were left now?
Mm-hmm.
So, because I don't think that she sees herself as being old. She sees herself as being that person.
She's
reliving
that
day. Exactly.
In that moment. Yeah.
She's living that day over and over again. And yes, she gets older. And there are moments when she gets very tired, just tired of the whole process, because she's not completely insane. She does know how old she is. She knows what's been going on. She knows that her family members are waiting for her to die, and that they want her money, and she knows that these things are happening. But I think that she always sees herself as that young girl who was hurt. So, I mean, I've been hurt before, you know. There's been those moments where there hasn't been closure for things.
Sure.
And I've been trying to use that experience, my own experience, rather than trying to create a false reality. Like, I obviously am not in my 50s or 60s, and I'm not, I don't live in a wedding dress, although I have a wedding dress on my door. Every morning I wake up and I look at that dress and, oh dear, I have to wear
this. As part of your preparation.
No, well, it's just, it won't fit anywhere else, so it sits on my door and it haunts me. What not to do.
Sharon Gamble with Intimate Opera's Amy Hayes, who will perform music of Dominic Argento in The Witch of the Place, the IOI's Indie Fringe Show. Performances will be August 15th through the 25th at Theater on the Square, and they'll feature Argento's Miss Havisham's Wedding Night, plus readings from Great Expectations, on which the opera is based, and some other art songs as well. You can learn more at intimateopera.org. Again, intimateopera.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find about some upcoming events at the Indianapolis Arts Center, as well as getting a preview of this year's Greek Fest.
Opa! And I'll have a conversation with Gail Payne about her show La Vie, L'Amour, and we'll have our calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.